Hi, podcast friends. Would you like to help All the Answers become very, very deeply, deeply, profoundly popular? You can do two very simple things for us today to make us incredibly fancy in the eyes of the world. Would you go to where you listen to us and just click on 5 stars? Give us a 5-star review, and you're going to make us very, very popular. Apparently, people who can support our podcast by giving us ads and such can't do so or won't do so until they see that we have like 50 bazillion 5-star reviews. So go to your local place that you're listening to our podcast and give us 5 stars. You don't even have to write words with your brain and hands. You just click the 5 stars. How easy is that? Also, check out patreon.com and search All the Answers podcast. And there you can donate funds in small chunks that then will make you famous on the podcast. We have 3 different tiers of support. You can either get a shout out on the podcast regularly. You can come on the podcast. You can ask a question that where you won't have to be on the podcast, but your question gets answered on live air on the podcast, or various other gifts that we will give you for donating to us and helping us keep bringing you fantastic, sassy, irreverent, spiritually aware content. We love you. Patreon.com, All the Answers podcast. And please give us that 5-star review today. It'll take you 36 seconds. We love you.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you're asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of catching. We laughing, we drafting, the passion to vary. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magicless, basking it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Oh, I was just suddenly like, okay, I'm looking at your background, and I'm like, oh, Cassidy's on a ship today. But the first thought I had was, actually, he's in a different room of his house, because I didn't look closely enough that I was like, oh, very wooden room, got it. And then I looked again and was like, oh, no, that's a ship. What is that?
It's like a
captain's.
I was hosting a murder mystery pirate thing that someone had individually hired me to host, like a dinner party pirate murder mystery.
That's great.
Thing over Zoom. And so they sent us these backgrounds, which are, this is like a pirate wench cafe. It's not at all what it is. Tavern. There we go. Pirate tavern.
So, yeah.
Not a saloon. That's more Western.
I've got so many taverns on the brain because, not Tavern on the Green, Tavern on the Brain, because I've been watching so much Outlander.
Lots of taverns and brothels and taverns.
Yes, a lot of brothels, a lot of sex on windowsills. Boy, that show does not shy away from oral pleasure.
Nor should any.
No, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Have you watched that show at all?
I watched like one episode and I was like, yeah, this is a good show. I could watch it, but I'm not gonna.
Why?
I have other shows. That's all.
Mm.
I just haven't added it to my...
Let's discuss. What shows are you watching right now?
Okay. We talked about it on Monday and the new episodes just came out. Tiger King season 2. I have not watched because I'm watching it with Denise and we're like, we gotta watch it.
Oh, so good. Okay.
Have you watched season 2?
I saw the whole shebang when it happened.
No, but the one that just came out.
Oh, I didn't know there was a just came out.
Yeah, like yesterday.
Oh, did not know. Did not
know.
Yeah, that's I'm just catching up on season 3 of Succession, so I'm like all obsessed with that.
Okay.
But they only drop like two a week or something, 2 per something, so you can't really binge.
No.
Oh my God, I'm glad you told. Wait, there's a whole other Tiger King?
Yeah,
season?
We have no idea what it's going to be about because I haven't like read into the spoilers or anything.
Didn't the story kind of wrap itself up?
Maybe not. I mean, we still don't know if she killed her husband and if they're going to bust her for that. We still don't know.
Right.
What, you know, is he stay in jail? We don't know. And like there's all the criminals who have done things like and they didn't really get in trouble. So maybe my prediction, not watching it yet, but my prediction is going to be he's going to just. Because it looks like he started to join forces with Carol Baskin to take everyone else down. That's my prediction. That the
well,
thing's
people do
be
weird
about...
shit when they go to jail.
Yeah,
right?
He's like, well, you know what?
Fuck
F all
it.
Y'all.
Yeah.
I don't know why also, suddenly I'm not saying bad words. That's not
yeah.
my way.
It's the morning time, Cassidy. Yeah. You're not ready. It's
I have
too
my
early.
Barry White voice going. We're good to go.
You're making me think of, did you see the whole Ghislaine thing? Ghislaine Maxwell?
Oh.
The accomplice.
Ghislaine? Ghislaine? I don't know how to say her name. You're probably saying it
Ghislaine.
Right.
Ghislaine. Yeah.
It's Ghislaine.
Yeah. But
no,
you're right to not know how to say her
pretty
name.
Much stay, I could not put my brain and soul into any of that stuff around, what's his name, with the sex
Jeffrey
island
Epstein.
And stuff. Jeffrey Epstein.
Sex island. Yep. He has a sex island, but he's dead now. It's, well, just since I brought it up for the listener who might be up to date-ish on the Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein thing. She's been in jail. They found her. She was hiding when all
She was sort of his procurer, right? She was someone who involved with procuring.
Okay, yes. So she's been in hiding the last year since all these documentaries came out, like just being like, hey, everyone in the world, here's what actually this fucktard did. This guy did this fucked up stuff and here's what he did. And she literally disappeared. The FBI was trying to find her. She was like hiding out in a mansion that she bought on a whim in the middle of the woods somewhere. They went to it, knocked on the door and said, you have to go to jail now. And she's been in jail for like a year. And she's now complaining. They've had her in solitary apparently the whole time, which is bad. And she's complaining like I don't have shoes. I haven't had real food this whole time. And the pictures of her are really horrific and terrible. But point being, many people are like, yeah, bitch, fucking deal with your shit.
Yeah.
Because yes, to answer your question, her thing was according to every victim who testified everywhere, all over the world, allegedly, I hate that we have to say that, that it's like, I don't think
you have to say it. We're not like we could say, I think, and we're an opinions podcast, so, you know, move on.
Right. And also, but just, we don't want to get sued by people with a lot more money than us.
I think that'll only happen if we start
become
talking
famous.
About Disney. It's Disney's the only one who we're going to get in trouble with.
Why?
Because they sue everybody. Oh, no, now we're screwed because I just said Disney sues people.
No. But allegedly, they allegedly sue
Disney
everybody.
Disney allegedly sues people.
See, now you're safe. Anywho's all, her deal was she would legit do stuff like this, driving in her car, passing a bus stop on the street. She'd be like, that blonde girl is Jeffrey's type. Get out of her car and say, hey, will you give this is going to sound crazy, but if you give this older gentleman I know a massage I'll give you $100 for the hour. And they'd be like poor girls with no money at a bus stop. And they'd be like, okay. And then they'd do it. And so that's one version of it. Another version is like they'd be at a nightclub and she'd go like, be like, come hang out with us and we'll pay for your drinks all night. And then they'd get them drunk and bring them back to the thing. And then once they were back at the house, there was no leaving until they... And all these women would get led up this staircase and they think they're giving a massage. And it started with massage therapists. They would hire massage therapists for actual massages. But then it would be like they'd walk into a room and he'd be on a table, buck naked, hard, often, just horrifying. And then these women would be like, oh, I see what's happening now. I guess I have to do this in order to get out of here. And so Ghislaine was setting all of that up.
Gotcha.
As a woman for other women, how...
often our own oppressors.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oof.
Well, thanks everybody for being here. Have a great day. It's a great podcast.
I think you'll be depressed somewhere now. Thanks.
Good night. That's all we had to say.
Yeah. I was in a pretty good mood coming in here. Thanks. Awesome. Glad we brought all that up.
Not anymore. Do you have fun holiday plans? Including the Christmassy, New Year's-y, Kwanzaa-y?
Sorry, I have to tell my phone to shut up. Sorry, guys. I'm telling my phone to shut up so it doesn't make noise during this conversation. Probably go to do a Friendsgiving with some friends that we usually get together for Thanksgiving, just because my family's sort of a little far-flung for that. And then normally we'd get together, like, with my parents and my brother and his family for... Christmas time, but I'm in this show, which is a little, but I'm not in it, you know, but I have to be on call for it. So I don't have freedom. I'm understudying a show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I thought I told you this. Oh, okay.
No, congrats.
And this is actually possibly a topic of discussion. I know.
For shiz.
Okay, so I'm understudying a show at a theater that I have worked at as like a lead.
Yeah.
In several times. Like, I've done lots of work at this theater. So it's a little like, I this is a moment of processing of my own, like, ego. You know, it's work. It pays the same. You know, it's actually important, especially in a time when, like, there's all these protocols around isolation. And, like, if someone even gets the sniffles, they might want to sit that show out until they get tested, you know. So, like, it's really important that they have an understudy for this show. But I'm understudying. I keep wanting to say This American Life. Nope. It's A Wonderful Life, the radio play.
Fun.
Although it's not a radio play. It's actually live on stage, but it's performed as though it's in a radio, oldie-timey radio station.
Yeah.
Radio show.
Where?
At Theater Works in...
Nice.
In Palo Alto.
San Jose. Palo Alto.
Palo Alto.
Palo Alto.
So I'm just saying it's very likely I'll end up going on, and I'm understudying all of the men. Yeah.
Oh, you will, marketh my words. You will go on a few times.
And.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I'm doing that, and I start rehearsals Monday. They've been rehearsing for a couple of weeks, and I joined for the last 2 weeks of, you know, rehearsal and going up so that I can start taking a lot of notes.
Wow.
I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm thinking I'm going to have a script. I'm going to have 3 different color highlighters. I'm going to have 3 different color note pencils, like, for blocking.
What if you tape it on camera?
I mean, I can do that, but I just have to study it all the time. I might as well just be there watching them do it. And I'll be honest, they have said, you don't have to memorize it all because it's a radio play, or it's performed a la radio play. Whereas the actors will probably be totally off book and pretending to use their scripts.
Right.
Like they would in a radio. But I will be able to be like, la, 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 I'm using my script.
That's great.
So hopefully... You know, they said, like, you'll probably have to memorize, like, 10% of each role when you...
Does that stress you out and make you feel stressed to know that you won't know the lines and that you'll be dependent on the page? Or does it make you feel more
relaxed? I'll know the lines because I'll have run them a bunch, but I won't know them. No, I love cold reading, too. Also, I'm a big fan of the cold read. So I do have the ability. They'll have to wear glasses, probably. And they might be like, you can't wear glasses. And I'll be like, gotta.
What about contacts?
I don't have them.
Yeah.
I guess I could get them within the next month. I could try.
That hard to get.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I would never
want to
wear them.
I've been wanting to get contacts, but I don't know how contacts work for progressive lenses because I just need them for reading.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
You can't, like, that'd be funny if you took them on and off every time you needed them on stage.
Blink, blink. Anyway, all that is to say, shit, there was a reason for that. I can't, even though I'm not in the show technically. But you're right. I'll probably end up going on.
Yeah.
I can't go anywhere because I have to be on call. In fact, this is the challenging part that I will have to solve. I have to be within a half an hour of the theater until like curtain.
Ugh.
You know what I mean? So, which is not my house. My house is not.
Nope.
So I'll have to drive to Fremont every day and park in a parking lot and write the Great American Novel in my car.
That's
something.
so annoying. Although I guess you could just see it like I'm getting paid to drive to Fremont every day.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it is. It's just, it's, you know, all the commute, none of the glory. So one of my plans that was suggested and helped developed by Denise is my father has just completed a book, which is an awesome book about development of like the brain and neuro stuff. I want to say neuroses, but not.
Maybe you need this book?
Yeah, maybe. And mainly how it is like in us as younger people and the education system and how it doesn't line up. How the framing of how our education is completely at odds with how our brains work.
A fucking 1,000,000% true for me.
And so I'm going to be making the audiobook of it. So I thought maybe I can make like a recording studio in my car with like pillows on the dash and stuff. And just sit there for an hour
taping
in Fremont in a parking lot behind the Walmart and do a chapter a day.
That's great. I bet you every now and again you'll get interrupted by phone calls that are like, quick, come to the theater. And it'll be like...
Exactly. So I can't record it on my phone because I need my phone to be able to be right there and looking at
it.
Anyway.
Wow. So will there be... I'm assuming... Yeah, okay. I just answered my own question. So just to say it out loud, there will be times where theoretically, there could be times where they say to you 2 days ahead of time, hey, we need you for Thursday night's show.
Absolutely.
But then other times where half an hour before curtain, they're like, bro.
Right.
Somebody just got sick right now.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Or, you know, that's, I mean, there's all sorts of stories about things that have happened for, like, at ACT, a theater we both know.
Right. I love
that
story.
They used to say, just be on call. And then one time an actor had what I believe is a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
During the opening scene of a show and left the stage. And the actor was trapped in the East Bay, which is across the bridge, for those of you who don't live around here, and couldn't get to the theater. It took him like an hour and a half to get to the theater to take over the show in the middle of the show.
The understudy.
So now they're like, you have to be at the theater. And now it's, I think their rule is like 10-minute walk. So you literally just have to be... You can be around the corner at a cafe, but that's it.
I see. Yeah.
But that's a different theater, this theater. This is the rule. So we're just, I'm working it out.
I hear you.
I mean, I could just go to the theater every night and just sit backstage, but...
I mean, that's kind of fun. That's not fun, except for how far it is.
Yeah.
If it weren't so far. Yeah, that's too far. All right, let's lighten your load.
Okay.
Which sounds like a poop joke, but isn't.
I'll need to take one at some point because I'm drinking coffee.
Great. Perfect. Same here. I am going to see tonight. First of all, I'm just... The amount of joy I'm getting in my body from getting to go see shows right now.
Ooh.
I have been just seeing shit and just talking.
You're going into NYC?
Not yet for shows. That's next week. I'm booking a bunch of those. I'm just like getting out, seeing stuff. I'm also going to do like a bunch of like go see Saturday Night Live and be in the audience and go be in the audience of this cooking show or just whatever. You know, just whatever. It just feels so good to be in an audience. Anyway, so I went and saw a really excellent production of The Niceties. Do you know this play?
I've heard of it. That's as good as you're going to get from me.
At an excellent theater called Shadowland Stages, which is 45 minutes from where I live. I plan to be very up there, submitting and auditioning and trying to get my solo shows up there. I've already made buddies with the AD a little bit, and I'm trying to be like, so what are we doing now, buddy? And he's great and intelligent. I've just been finding like good, solid theater in the area, which has been a pleasant surprise because you never know, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, tonight I am driving with a new friend of mine who's also a theater person, local Beaconite, an hour and 20 minutes away from here to see in Stamford, Connecticut. Stamford with an M, which always makes me laugh. Stamford. It feels like they're saying Stanford wrong.
Or like a toddler saying Stanford.
Yeah, exactly.
My daddy goes to Stamford College.
Exactly. The Golden Girls told through puppets.
That sounds about right.
It's highlight moments, like best moments from famous episodes of The Golden Girls, which I grew up watching like every single episode, 50 times each, probably. I've owned the box set when that was a thing, and then I've watched it, downloaded it. I've seen this show so many times, I'm going to be able to recite these puppeted scenes. And just the idea that they're doing it in puppets, like if you're as obsessed with the Golden Girls as I am, you'd be very excited about what I'm going to see tonight. Very excited about that. You seem very underwhelmed.
No, I'm thinking about it. I'm actually thinking it out. Like in my, I did go a little internal. You are correct with my eye glaze, but I was literally like picturing the Golden Girls and thinking about how they, did you know that they were supposedly in their early mid 50s?
Oh yeah.
That's me.
Oh yeah.
You guys, I'm the Golden Girls right now and I'm the guys they were dating. And I don't think that's true.
Well, they gray haired him up and they went for it, you know.
Yeah, they were like, but that was back when like the 50s, well, yeah, except for Sophia. And Sophia was the second youngest cast member, but she was playing the mom.
She was the youngest.
I thought she was the second youngest, but you were correct. She is young.
I
always thought she was youngest, and then I thought I got corrected on that. So
okay, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Either way, she was younger and they put a wig on her and she seemed older.
Right. But even them being like these... older ladies. That was the whole thing. They were in their golden years, the Golden Girls, and they were older ladies in a retirement village, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a retirement village, but your point stands.
I mean, they were living like, they were in that world. They were like.
They were in a house that they all were roommates in, but they would date men from retirement villages, and that would be like the topic of the episode.
Right. And I just have a hard time wrapping my head around. I think they were considered like in the. More in the, not middle age, but in the, you know, the next stage, whatever after middle age
is. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Old age.
Do you know Wilford Brimley was 50, was my age during Cocoon?
Actually, you know what's funny that you say that? I learned that last week listening to a podcast.
Maybe we heard the same information.
Maybe.
But yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
He was playing, and they were playing, like, literally, that was the whole point
Grandpas.
Of that show, is that they were old people.
Grandpas.
They were elderly.
Yeah. Oh, are you listening to Smartless?
I am not. I think I just saw it written, but it's weird that it was in the zeitgeist last week.
Yeah, that is weird. So that's a play I'm going to see tonight. Tomorrow night, I'm going to see another show at a local theater that is not a professional house. It's a community theater. I'm a little nervous, but also excited. I'll report back. It's a play called The Price. I did want to talk about the play.
Arthur Miller.
Yes, thank you. And the play I saw called The Niceties at Shadowland Stages. It's if folks are looking for, a very well-written two-person play about race and white, what's it called? Not supremacy. White
fragility.
Privilege.
And privilege.
Privilege, yeah. And fragility, yeah. And it also weaves in like millennial entitlement and millennial foot stamping with real serious race consciousness conversations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great play. I think I'm amazed by what that play accomplished in an hour and a half of, or however, you know, one act. No, there's an intermission.
Of two people talking, right?
Two people talking. How did they touch on all of that? They so much is dealt with, and it's really just a conversation between two people, a white lady in power and a person of color who's a student at her school. And boy, howdy, does a lot of stuff get touched. So anyway, that was very, okay, I'll be real transparent here. Surprise, surprise. It was so uncomfortable that a couple times during the first act, I was like, I'm going to go ahead and leave at intermission. I can't do this. And then I was like, oh, I'm doing white fragility. I'm going to take some breaths and stay. And I'm so glad I stayed. I mean,
yeah,
I have a lot to say about the white fragility idea, because we do have to have mercy too for ourselves of like, this shit is hard, and it isn't fair that we're just having to deal with it now, and people of color have been dealing with it for centuries. It's not fair, and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's not hard just because it shouldn't have happened. So anyway, I was like, okay, but it's your responsibility, Katie, to stay and deal with this, because come on. If people of color can live a single day in this world, you can fucking sit and watch this.
Yeah, and that's what it also comes down to. It's like, you can sit and watch this. You won't die.
No, you won't die.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, though. It's uncomfortable, and then we go, oh, it's way, that word means one thing, but actually sitting in my body, that means a whole different thing.
Yep.
And I still won't die. So let me, and like you said, yep. That bears reminder for all the stuff that we, like, that is completely relevant to all the, like, numbing of feelings that we do on every topic.
Totally.
You know, it's like 99% of the time, the desire to flee from it, and then the, okay, I'm going to push through, I'm going to face it. And you're like, oh God, I'm so glad I faced it. Like, what the hell was I thinking fleeing from this?
Yep.
Because if I flee from it, guess what? It didn't go away. It just sat there half done.
Yep.
Yeah. If you'd have left intermission in the middle of that, you'd have been racked with guilt. You'd probably would have been still in conversation with whatever was brought up and not resolved. So you'd still be about it, and it wouldn't have gone away.
Well, yeah, all of that. And also, like, amazing sort of like personal victory things came from that evening, because I stayed till the after the show. It was like 900 miracles. Like, the topic of the play I got to deal with and wrestle with and deal with my white fragility and all that. Processing the trauma of it, to your point, exactly. I got to, like, breathe through my discomfort, get through my own triggers on it, et cetera, et cetera. And then, like, career-boosting miracles that, you, that, like, what? Like, wow. And for me, it's, like, such a good lesson, because I have a real tendency. My thing when I was a lot younger was, like, I barrel through everything. Nothing scares me. I won't own vulnerability ever. I'm just tough and strong and fuck everything. And then I got, like, that was sort of killing me. And so I swung way the other way, and I got very, like, self-care oriented, and, like, I don't tolerate shit that is, nope, I'm out. Like, if I have to go, I go because I care for myself.
Right, and which so is another thing we will tell people to do. Like,
yep.
Absent yourself from situations where you are being traumatized.
Exactly. And so then where is the line in the middle where you go like, okay, this is a time to endure versus this is a time to bail. And you know what's interesting is like, this is how it always works for me on my own healing path. Whatever I'm dealing with in the moment in my own life gets reflected to me in the clients I see every
right.
single time. So I've had all these clients lately that are like in family dynamics where it's bad enough that they shouldn't be close to these people, but not so bad that they should never talk to the parent figure.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, ugh, fuck a duck, because that's like, okay, let me back up a little. Something I've been being confronted with lately is this thing I just named, but it's showing up in a lot of areas where I'm like, in some kind of dynamic where I'm like, cool, I'm out, because I learned how to give myself permission to leave, right? But then I'll realize a few days later, oh, I don't actually need to be 100% out of that. I need to talk with them about navigating it differently. But I'll only realize it after giving myself permission to leave.
Right.
And then I'll be like, oh, there's a middle ground here. I hope I haven't ruined my opportunity to go back and have a middle ground experience by being like, thank you so much. Bye. So because I'm working with that right now, everybody who comes for a session is like, so my mom, you know, it's I'm seeing it reflected in almost every healing session, which is incredible and miraculous because the universe in my life is like, sorry, bitch, whatever you need to face and wake up to, we're going to confront you with it relentlessly until you fucking see it. And I don't get to hide. There's no hiding.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so holiday things. I want to share this fun... God, there's 90 things I want to tell you about. Where to begin? So if you recall, I was going to lead a trip to Egypt
mm-hmm.
with some friends of mine that are healers. All those people are in Egypt right now.
Right.
And I've been watching like the Facebook posts and just seeing people like, we're at this temple. Look, it's the Sphinx. I'm on the Nile. You know, and these are like some friends of mine. So it's really cool. And it's every time I see the pictures, I get the energy download of Egypt itself. And so that's been cool to watch. And I have to admit, I'm so happy I'm not there.
Can you share? Is it relevant to share why you didn't go?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually really relevant. So there's a couple reasons. One is psychically, I kept getting this ping, this like awareness of like, they're going to have a bunch of difficulties on that trip that I think my guidance system was like, you're not up for those difficulties. That's not what you need to be dealing with right now. You're going to be working through some shit right now that if you're like on a plane and then maybe getting sick and then having to stay in Egypt and maybe they can't get back easily and COVID and passports, like it was just very clear to me that, I don't know, they were going to go through some stuff that my system just kind of wasn't up for at the moment. Cut to, they are going through stuff and I'll tell you the story. Number two was I haven't fully resolved this whole trauma, terror reaction to turbulence that I have.
Oh, right. A really long plane flight.
Uh-huh.
Jesus.
Yep.
With lots of opportunities.
And one of my friends who is on that trip posted like, tough night on the plane. Couldn't sleep at all because turbulence all night long. And I was like, thank you, God in heaven. Because my reaction to it is so over the top because of whatever it's triggering. That would have been, I'm all set. I'm going to fly right back because I'm done. Like just, or I would have been like, I live in Egypt now. I live in Egypt. I'm fuck my apartment. Sorry.
I'm never flying back.
No, my dog can live with someone else. Like done. So those are the reasons. Now, interestingly, I was talking to, so my ex who was on here, Newman Manfredson, lovely human who I'm very good friends with still. We talk regularly. He's great. He is there on this trip. And so is one of my clients and so are two of my friends. Anyway, let's just say a bunch of people got COVID in the group, which is unfucking fortunate. And I did a whole healing session for them the other day to facilitate them getting better. And they are energy workers and worked on themselves too. And then there was a little bit of some drama in the group about like half of them were like, hey, could you guys like not be near the rest of us? Because we don't want to get COVID. Duh. And then reactions to that. And then like some divisiveness, just some energy of like, they're with us or they're against us. And then my friends who I'm talking with are going like, really, guys? come on. This isn't a spiritual issue. This is like, we don't want to get COVID. Please don't be near us. Not
right.
We're not judging you. And this isn't about like, believe in God enough and you won't get COVID. Like, let's not be fucking crazy. You know?
We got it. So clearly.
Yeah, some of you fucking got it and you're the spiritualist of them all. So get your fucking head on straight, you know? And so there's been some of that. And yeah. But there's also like tons of like, holy fuck, look at this view and we're at the Nile. I mean, they're in fucking Egypt. It's amazing. It's amazing. So I'm very excited for them and also a little sad that they're going through hard times and very grateful I'm not there because I'm just dealing, I'm doing a lot of tapping right now. I'm clearing layers of emotional trauma. I'm doing stuff. Katie's busy on her own healing shebang bang.
Yeesh.
So, and by the way, EFT tapping, it is the tool for me right now. I'm so on it. Like it's hitting, like what I need is getting hit by that and that alone. And it's fascinating. Because remember we talked about on here how you need what you need when you need it on the healing path?
Yeah.
Like sometimes you need therapy and other times you need EMDR. And other times you need to do some mushrooms. And other times you need an energy healer. And other times you need to rest. And other times you need to face your fears. Like it changes all the time. And people always want it to be like one size fits all. It's not. It changes all the time. You might not need a divine light energy healer fucking for every problem you have.
You might need penicillin.
Exactly. Is penicillin still given?
Yeah, it's given. I think it's probably still what they give for like
infections.
Yeah, or what's it called? They give variants like amoxicillin and stuff. But isn't penicillin what they give for like
STDs?
STDs, certain ones. I don't think the original, the OG. What's the syphilis? Oh. I think they still give it for syphilis. Mm-hmm. I'm talking out my ass. I actually don't know. I could look it up.
I have no idea.
It doesn't matter that much in this conversation. Moving on.
I'm a little obsessed with penicillin right now because of Outlander. Because there's a whole penicillin thread. Anyhoozle. What the fuck was I talking about?
You're doing a lot of tapping. Tapping.
Anyway, the tapping's been incredibly productive. And I'm talking about how on the healing path, you need what you need when you need it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm having such incredible results that I'm having to like, I'll do like, I'm not kidding, 3 minutes of tapping on a feeling that's in my body. And for 24 hours, I have to integrate it. I'm like fully sensitive and like blown open and need like downtime. It's like I'm moving real slow right now because of my body's like, cool, great. That was a big piece. So you need to give me a day and a half before we're even close to ready to be like a normal functioning human. So that's happening. And I'm happy about it, but it's a lot of work. And it means that if I were in Egypt and this shit were activated, that would be too much.
That'd be a lot. I'm really glad you're not there. Because especially when you're like, a bunch of people got COVID. I was like, well, that's what I said in my head the day you announced you're going.
You're right.
I was like, that sucks because it's probably going to happen. And it did.
And it did. And also, I do get psychically something about getting back, something about passports, getting back into the country, COVID, like they may have to quarantine
yeah, they,
or they may
they're
have to...
not going to be able to fly back for some of them won't be able to fly back, I imagine, for a while.
Well, so if they have another week and a half or two on the trip, I guess that can count as their quarantine time, but only if they're actually quarantining, which
right.
I don't know if they're
so
doing
it. So then they
it.
Have to like, some of them might have to stay like 2 weeks longer in a hotel because until they're
right.
symptom free for 10 days or some shit like that.
Yep.
And test negative. Yeah. And that's the other
All
thing
the
is
things.
They have to be able to test negative.
Yeah. That's hard. Yeah. To that point, I was asking the other day, like, am I, because I'm, so I'm going to go see my dad in New Mexico over the Christmas time. Mm-hmm. The Christmas time.
Are you driving because you're Katie
well,
and you're a maniac
who drives
thousands of miles?
So what I was going to talk about is I still get a big fat no on getting in a plane. This time around, I was like, I'm willing to do it and deal with myself in some way, like take a bunch of beta blockers or whatever, just smoke DMT, like whatever I have DMT. To do.
Just have a full-on, full-blown trip where you're like seeing wolf heads in the cockpit.
Yeah.
I think that's what DMT does. I'm not sure, actually.
Good thinking. It like takes you down a spiral and then you meet with the machine elves in the trees. It's a whole thing.
It's Keebler? Is it a Keebler brand thing?
Well, machine elves, interestingly, are a thing that is reported by many, many DMT lovers. They call them machine elves. They look like machines, but elves.
But they live in trees.
Apparently.
And do they make cookies?
Well, remember when we had Alex on, Alex Murray? He was the guy, the Garfield guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Alex, who's a great dude, he showed me that term. He introduced me to the term machine elves. And then like everywhere I look, it's people talking about, I did DMT and I met the machine elves. And I'm like, wow. Okay. Anyway, I've been asking like about it, you know, how I do. And it's like, nah, you're not flying. You're driving. And I'm like, fuck you.
What about a train?
Yeah, you can do a train.
That may be fun. I mean, a train would be fun.
Well, I did a train from Michigan to Denver.
Right, and then you'd have to rent a car in Denver to drive to Albuquerque.
That's the thing. Which I could do all that. It's, to tell you the truth, the train is hard because it's hard to sleep. The sleeping cars are lovely, but the track I was on for that particular trip, I learned afterwards, is notorious for being a very bumpy track.
Interesting.
Like, it didn't scare me, but I couldn't sleep. It was like you're being rocked around all night long.
Oh, God, that would put me right to sleep. That rocking would be like, oh, yeah.
But the kind of rocking where it's like, ka-kung, kung, 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 ka-kung, ka-kung, kung, kung, kung.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's not gentle.
Gotcha.
Yeah, unfortunately. But that doesn't mean that because I don't know if I would be on the same track with this trip, going from New York.
Do some research.
I'll look into that. But it's almost not any less stressful. And I like hotels.
And driving is quicker, actually. So.
Is it?
Yeah, because the train stops for like chunks of time. And it doesn't always go 80 miles an hour, especially in the winter. So like.
It's true.
Probably has a different.
Today I was thinking, could I pull off 10 hours a day? Because if I could, I'd get there in 2 days. 10 hours a day. I used to be able to do that so easy, Cass. I can't. Now I'm like, 4 hours is hard.
I mean,
10 hours?
Too bad you don't have a traveling buddy, because then it would be an event. You could be like, we're going to drive this route and take 5 days because we're going to stop in Utah at Spiral Jetty and see this amazing piece of earthwork. And then we're going to go to Woomty Woomp. Yeah.
You know what? I'm glad you're giving me. This is good. I'm going to try to talk my sister into flying up from Florida, meeting me here. And we drive together. Or I could pick her up halfway. Like, I'll meet her in, like, D.C.
How's that relationship?
Fantastic.
Good.
God damn it, I love her.
I don't think I hear about her very much, or if ever.
Yeah, that's...
Like, just maybe never.
Huh. Let's talk about her.
Yeah.
We gotta have Aris on. We gotta have her on. Oh my God, I just realized we're gonna have her on.
When, if, is she full sister?
No. Ooh, this is a good story. And she's good with me sharing it. We've talked. Oh my God, this is a good story.
Call her up right now. See if she can just jump on with us.
She would, but she's working. No. She can't. I know.
People have jobs. What's that?
It's so dumb with the jobs.
With the like jobs that are predictable and you're like, I know where they are now because...
Like at the same time every day or something.
Same place.
So weird. And like the paycheck is like always there or something.
And it's probably pretty good.
It's like consistent and you could lean on it. It's
and
dumb.
You can understand what's going on in your life.
You can make plans in your life. Like, what a stupid idea.
Oh, good.
Wait, let me do it. Girl, any chance you can hop on the podcast
right
the fuck now?
Oh, my God. I love it.
She's going to be like, you're insane. No, we are talking about you. Okay, here's the story. Oh, God. Okay, so first the dinosaurs came, and then the earth cooled. No, first the earth cooled.
Flip that. Scratch that. Reverse it.
My dad and my mother met. And then,
did they have sex at some point?
Yeah, but yes. They made me. I existed. I was raised.
Through that particular alchemy, as we discussed in the last episode.
Exactly.
The alchemy of...
Right. Yeah. Okay, penises entered places, and then...
Ooh, didn't need to think that. I mean, I actually can't picture it because I've never seen a picture of your dad or your mom, so I don't have any framework, luckily.
Guess what's coming immediately on your phone when we're done here today?
Are you going to send me like a porn picture with their pit faces superimposed?
Oh, that would take way more tech savvy than I have, but
tell you what,
God,
send
I wish
me
I could.
Pictures, I'll send that
just
back
of their
to you.
Face. Oh, perfect. Okay, perfect. Okay, so they make me, I exist, I turn 18, they get divorced, I go to college. 5 minutes later, my dad is remarried. No joke. Like within minutes.
Yeah.
He's just like, cool, I'm out. Oh, hello. And we're married. It was actually like 9 months later. He like, I don't know. So they did a clear, apparently, according to him, there was no cheating, but he had known his future wife through work. And guess what? So did my mom.
Yes, of course.
And then they start dating while he's like in the divorce mode. They get married 9 months later and they move from Florida to New Mexico. I went to college like a week later. No joke. Did a lot of drugs because I wasn't ready to process my feelings. A lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol, all the things. In that year that I went to college, my freshman year, my dad very quickly met, you know, asked out this woman he'd been working with forever, according to his version of the story, and got married to her. All while I'm like, just still processing that they're not together and that I've gone to college and that everything has died and changed. Okay, so he gets remarried 9 months later. He gets headhunted. They move to, he and his new wife move to New Mexico. His new wife has a two-year-old from a whole different scenario. She's already 2 years old, the child. My dad then raises Sarah from age two to forever, but they don't tell her she's not blood related to him.
Oh, yeah.
They never tell her until...
I'm hoping she has heard this at this point, though.
Well, I'm going to tell you the whole story. So they don't fucking tell her. I'm a mess. You know, I'm starting to like get sober. I graduate college. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm all fucked up. I need to get sober and I need to deal with my trauma and what the fuck, right? Meanwhile, I'm like building an acting career, but I'm all fucked up. But I'm succeeding on one level, but like, oh, all a mess on another. So I go back to family visits in New Mexico and there's this child, this like sister thing that's like not related to me, but she's there. And I'm navigating that. And he's, my dad has a new wife and that's complicated. Long story long. One day when Sarah, my stepsister, is about 13, so that would be like 11 years later, okay, I'm deep in my process of, I'm in sobriety, I'm going to meetings, I like have to limit my time with the family because they're kind of crazy and it triggers me and makes me want to binge eat, it makes me want to drink alcohol and all the things. I come back for one of my holiday visits and we're at a dinner, the four of us, and I assume, wrongfully, she's 13, right? And her adoptedness by my dad is a given to me. She's been adopted.
Right.
So at this dinner, I say something like, well, Sarah asks a question and I go, well, you know, it's like how dad and it's like how you and I don't have the same dad, but we do, and how we have different moms. And the whole table freezes and looks at me like big wide eye. Yep. Like the music stops playing in the background. Smoke stops being smoke. Like everything just freezes. And I realize instantaneously they haven't told her by everybody's reaction. Sarah is looking at me like very sort of blink, blink. Like she like can't even hear the words I've said. She's like, what do you mean? And I go, and I clock the situation instantaneously and start backpedaling and making up lies to cover for my dad's lie.
Yeah.
So ignore me. I'm insane. I've had a glass of wine or... I hadn't had a glass of wine because I was sober then. I make up some bullshit about like,
yeah.
I mean, what I mean
we
is
have different moms, but right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just kind of cover it over. And then Sarah goes, oh, okay, whatever. And then we just move on. Thank God. And she doesn't clock it. After the meal, I go up to my dad and I go, you want to let a sister in on the fact of what's going on? So I don't say crazy shit in front. I can't believe you didn't tell me you haven't told her, number one, because I just put my foot all the way down my throat. Number two, why have you not told her? Like, please, why? You know, the longer you wait, the worse that is. Like, if an adult finds out that their whole childhood, they were adopted and not told, that's a lot worse than if you tell a two-year-old, this is your adopted dad and mommy's your mommy. And the end, kids go, okay, and that's it.
Yeah.
So he says, we don't think it's best for her. She's going through some stuff herself. It's not the right time. And you know what? They were raising her. They knew her better than me. What the hell did I know? They were her parents. And I was like, all right. I didn't agree with it, but I was like, I'm not going to.
Right.
I'm going to stay out of it. But the problem that created for me was that for the next 10 years, every time I would see this sister that I'm developing this intimate relationship with, who turns out to be someone I like adore and love a lot, and we like have Christmases together, and then she and I go off to a separate hotel because we got to get away from the parents. So we're like tight now, and she's like in her early 20s or maybe her teens, and I'm older and the sister, and I have wisdom. And there's this intimacy building where every time I'm with her, I am lying to her.
Yeah.
Okay. Because of
you've been made complicit.
Exactly. So we would be on Christmas trips to like hotels at various places. And I'd be texting my dad from the car with Sarah being like, listen, I know you guys didn't want to tell her last year. She's doing great. We're here. We're talking about school. Could I just tell her? Or could you guys tell her tomorrow so that on the ski trip in 2 days, I don't have to lie when she asks me? Because she would say shit all the time. Like, I wonder whose genes that is. Do you think that's because I'm, do you think I act that way because I have dad's genes? And I'd be like, oh, God. Oh, fuck. And I'd have to like change the subject and dance around it. It sucked. They wouldn't tell her. They wouldn't tell her. They wouldn't tell her. They wouldn't tell her. 10 years went by. And I was starting to get real like, so I'm going to tell her in about a year. Like, I was starting to get real, y'all need to step up, because what the fuck? And I knew it really wasn't my place.
Right.
But also, it just didn't feel correct. Finally, they told her. They didn't even call me and tell me they were going to tell her. They just fucking did it, which was also shitty. I think I learned through her. I can't even remember, but it was quite recent. Maybe it was 2 years ago now, maybe a year ago. Yeah, she's 26, or 27. She's in her late 20s. She took it very well behaviorally in the moment. She was very like, wow, that makes me respect dad even more because he didn't have to raise me as well as he did, but he tried. He really tried. He was really there for me. And thanks for telling me, and I'm grateful. She was kind of, she took it really well. Now, I know her, and she's told me stuff. She's had a process around it because that's huge.
Yeah.
So that's my sister, and we get along really well. I love hanging out with her. It's gotten easier and easier as she's gotten older, obviously, because I've grown up and so is she. And so it's, we're just people who happen to like each other, which I was saying to Rami actually the other day. I think I was saying that to Rami. How nice it is to have the experience of a family member. I'm like, wait a minute. This is a family member who I want to hang out with, like more than for just a couple hours. Like I that's like, wow.
I had an experience. I'm being going to be a little general because it's someone else's story somewhat, but really working through with someone about family, what family means to them and what it means to me because of our absolutely different experiences, and how it's actually hard to trust or believe that that would be the experience with my family.
Right.
Because that's not how families are.
Right.
So like, I don't have anything resembling your experience, as we discussed. So I think of it as an I don't now think of it as unusual. I think of my family as unusual, frankly. I do know that my family is unusual, which sucks. That is the worst statistic in my head. Like the fact that, I love my family and it's easy.
Yeah.
Is unusual that I have a unicorn family?
Yeah.
That what? You mean abuse and chaos is the norm?
Yeah.
I mean, abuse is, I'm throwing that word around pretty lightly, but like, you know, dysfunction and chaos and judgment and the things that people do to each other in the name of some form of love.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the norm.
Right.
And ease and joy and occasional tiny bumps of like, ooh, I wish you didn't say it that way. That's unusual.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I hear you.
Anyway, really having to like work with this person on helping them see that like, I get that.
Mm.
That is your experience. That is not what is happening here or going to happen here.
Hmm.
So.
Amazing.
In interacting with my family. Yeah.
You know, and the way I relate to what you're saying is because I'm constantly personally going through these sort of large changes. Like yesterday I was describing to Kat, who we had on the podcast a couple weeks ago, I was describing to her like this huge breakthrough I had like 2 days ago that was like, oh my God, I removed misery from my low spine and I don't have to feel like my baseline is kind of this low grade heavy thing that I'm doing light work around. And I can have like joy at my midline. Like what? Like I just had this whole like breakthrough the other day. You know, I'm always going through stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's just my path, right? And you know what's very interesting is that is in my human design chart.
Yeah.
It's like your life is, they call it, it's the growth line or the growth. Anyway, the human design version of my purpose is to grow. It's just growth. So if I'm growing, I'm succeeding according to human design. I'm supposed to be a leader while growing, and I'm also supposed to be busy while growing. That's my That's how I'm functioning correctly for myself. Anyway, I was describing it to her and her response was like, because we do voice memos back and forth. And she goes, man, I love it when those really huge shifts happen. You know, every now and again, when you have one of those really big shifts. And I remember thinking, you mean like every other week? Because that's what my life is. Mm-hmm. And she was like, once every couple years, you go through like a big thing in therapy where you go, oh, this weight is lifted.
Yeah.
Wait, why did I start down that track? You were talking about family.
Family and what person's... they mean.
Oh, and you said you were trying to explain, no, that's not what this is.
Right.
This is not going to happen that way because family is a very different thing over here. I will regularly have the experience of, oh, that's what people mean when they say very basic shit. Like, I hugged my mom and I sighed a deep sigh and it felt so nurturing. And I'll be like, what?
That like, just I don't know. Like someone was literally going like, marshmallowgi kalaimunoto charada.
After I do like a big tapping session or a big energy healing session, I'll be walking the dog in the park and I'll feel like I'll take a sigh of relief and it'll nurture me. And I'll be like, oh, I bet if I were hugging a person and they were kind and available and I felt like this in my body and they felt like this in their body, that would equal people nurturing you. Like, that's what that is. Oh, or I'll like hug a healthy friend and be like, oh my God, that is not what hugs are. Mm. Wow. That was intimate and kind and warm. And they're like, what? It's just a hug. And I'm like, you don't get it. This being here didn't. Nope. I went from being made of metal to being made of love. And that's not the same.
It's not the same at all. I mean, that leads me just to the thought of how 100%, like how we all perceive the world in such different ways. Like we've talked about it in terms of Enneagram. We've talked about it in terms of human design. We talked about it in terms of, you know, the popular concept of love languages. Like that's it. Like if you are operating, let's say we're talking about love languages, which I recently read a little pretty big pushback on the framing of that, but
I don't remember
enough about it to even address it. So I'll come back to that. Okay. But still, as a framing, it's a good start. It's a great start to a conversation more than anything. But that like the fact that like if I'm always talking about like, you know, you don't love me because or I'm feeling unloved because you never give me presents or whatever. And the other person, that's not their love language at all. So it's not like they're being an asshole. They're literally like, how is giving you presents loving you?
Right.
Or like I've told the story about how Rami and I are having a big conflict. Like this is like 15 years ago, but a frustrating conversation around something that they were going through. And I was like just pouring on the three energy of reassurance. Mm. I was reassuring a three is what I was basically doing. About their humanity, because I'm a three.
Right.
And that's what I would need to hear. And this nine was like hearing gibberish for hours at a time.
Ooh.
Because the three thing I was pouring on was literally the blind spot of the nine, the place that the nine can't see. So it didn't confirm. So that's one way. Denise and I have been talking a lot about how I literally think through everything.
Yeah.
And she feels through everything.
Right.
She's like, what is your brain doing? I don't even understand that. Like, and so as a result, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm going to insist that you do it this way because that's the way the body works.
Right.
Like, no, I literally can't do what you're saying.
Right.
Because my body processes things through this filter up here, this temple.
Yep.
I'd like it to be more in the body and I'm working on that. But my primary motor is my brain. And your primary motor is your spirit. And this person's primary motor is their spine. Like, I don't know.
Yep.
We have such utterly different ways of perceiving and I'm on a tear here because this is like I remember learning about intelligences at one point where like some kids are, you know, aural, they learn through hearing.
Right.
But another kid absolutely cannot learn through hearing and has to learn through looking. And another kid has to learn through physically
touch
interacting. And they just can't. And it's not a deficiency. It's not like they're, oh, that kid has special needs because they can only do it through touch.
Yep.
No.
Which brings us back to how fucked the education system is.
Yeah.
Because we think sitting in chairs and listening to a person say words is the way everybody learns.
Guess what? It does work great for 10% of those kids.
Exactly.
It's 100% the perfect way for those 10 kids.
Yep. That's, yeah, it's like...
It's frustrating. It's like we're all living in different planets.
1,000,000%. It is. I mean, I have often have the feeling and have said to friends of mine at various points, it is a miracle that any of us date any others of us.
No kidding.
How are any of us dating ever? Because
yeah,
the more you get to know someone, you all you can see is how different you are.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be the same as anyone. And the closer you get, the more real you get, the more transparent you get, you go like, holy shit, like, I am not like you. Like, I'm like you enough that it works, but boy, are we different.
Yeah. Like, you and me are very different.
Yeah.
And I love you so directly. Like, you're one of my best friends by far, and yet we are so different.
Yeah, we're pretty different. But also, I'd argue we have some useful similarities.
Absolutely. And we learn from each other all the time.
That's true.
A huge part of, I think, that's where that right there, that's where the love can come in, why we can date somebody if we're open to that place of learning.
Well, that's where it comes back to, like, when the spiritual people say relationships are about growing spiritually, that's literally what they're for. You think it's about the fun, you being humans. It's about putting on the wedding dress and walking down the aisle and having the pretty house. And now we have pets and kids and we're happy in our house forever. It's like the spiritual perspective is like, no, this person is here to activate you, to trigger you so that you can grow.
Yeah.
And like, I had a therapist once who used to say, you want someone who triggers you enough, like reminds you of your parents enough that you're going to work through your shit, but is like the healed version of your parents so that you can work through your shit together. Isn't that great? And then I also like something else they said. They said, you want someone, it's not like you can, you're never going to find someone with no baggage. You want someone whose baggage matches your baggage. Isn't that a great idea?
It's a really good lyric from Rent.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me.
I want someone whose baggage goes with mine.
Yeah, see, I bet you that lyricist got that from a therapist.
Probably.
Do you know how many 12-step phrases I hear in movies and television?
Oh.
All the time. I'm like, yeah, that writer, I know where you hang out on the afternoons. I know where you at.
I know where you get your stuff.
What did I hear this morning? One of those, if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result. If you want something new, you have to do something new. Like, if you want different results, you have to do different behaviors, which seems very obvious, but it's not.
Right.
Like, if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep getting what you got.
Right.
So if you want something new, you have to do something new. But like, people, that's like a lot to get your head around in reality. And I know where I saw it. It was in a trailer for a new J-Lo movie. Yep. And I was like, and it's like J-Lo as a rock star on stage saying it to the audience, you know how they say, if you want something new. And I was like, this fucking writer goes to AA, motherfucker.
That's right. We know. Busting them out. This might not even be at all relevant, but it's one of my favorite, like, I think I saw it in like a panel cartoon.
Yeah.
But it's still one of my favorite, like, concept jokes. And it is, when you're looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, red flags just look like flags.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, my God.
Like, it's a physics joke that's about the heart.
Oh, my God. I am fully stealing that.
Isn't that?
Wow.
I mean, that goes in a routine. Like, that shit is, that goes in your next one-woman show. It's so good.
Oh my God, that's good. Oh my God, I need a minute. That's really good. Where'd you get that?
I don't know. It was like I hope it wasn't like a meme, you know, because that feels a little too direct. It's fine if it was, because it's good, whatever it is. But my memory is that it was like in a Pogo cartoon or like, not Snoopy, but like one of the more, I might have been like even like Baby Blues or some, you know, strip cartoon that occasionally like drops nuggets.
Oh man.
It wasn't Garfield, so it wasn't part of the field.
Sorry, Alex.
But it was definitely.
On a related but semi-tangential topic, have you also heard about or seen Britney versus Spears?
No.
The documentary. Okay, so I'm also, you know, I have a thing with pop stars. Super obsessed with pop stars. Particularly female pop stars. Very obsessed with them, which I today was thinking, having just listened to a podcast about Britney versus Spears, which is a documentary about the conservatorship, which, by the way, she's free from, if you didn't know that already.
I'm sure everybody knows.
I was listening to that podcast and thinking, oh, duh. My obsession with pop stars comes from, I mean, this is so obvious, it's a stupid sentence, but I'll elaborate after I say it. Television and radio raised me. Like, my parents barely raised me. They just gave, like, Judgment and Shame and some money. And that's it, really. And, like, oh, and sense of humor. They did funny. Funny, judging, shaming, and money.
Shelter and food.
That's money.
Yeah.
It's kind of part of money. True. These are all things that aren't terrible things. Sort of. But then TV and radio were where I got any sense of, like, a vision for the future or a sense of, like, feeling good in my body. Like, oh, I'm watching this TV show and I identify with these people and they're nice to me because they were just not there being judgy. Or, you know what I mean? Like, you watch a pop star when you're a kid and you're like, oh, amazing. And it all just feels like magic and miracles and hope and dreams.
Yeah.
Right? So in a way, I think I internalized the idea that, like, pop stars, it's like, there was sort of this idea in the 80s, I wonder if you feel this way, that you too could be a pop star.
Right.
Or, like, you too could be Ricky from Silver Spoons, or you could be the sister on Different Strokes. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was a way that we all were sort of raised by TV in the 80s and 90s.
Uh-huh.
And those of us who, like, needed it real bad, like, over-identify with these characters we watch because it's the only place maybe you felt good at all. Like, I was obsessed with Madonna, obsessed, and still have a certain level of need to know what's going on with Madonna.
Well, I just want to put a pin in, this is why I've heard this concept and it resonates zero with me, because we have different experiences.
Right, because your parents were parenting you.
Right, but I've heard this from countless people, and it's why I was never obsessed with, like, people who saw Goonies 10 times. Like, I saw it once, it was good.
Oh, that's so interesting.
But I didn't need it.
You know, to that point, I'm going to... Okay, let me throw an armchair theory at you and see what you think of this. I've noticed this thing. This is not... I'm not breaking it. I'm not, like, revolutionary here, but it does seem to be the case that... Let me frame this differently. When I look at you in your life now, you don't overly value money. I see you, like, you take jobs you like doing. You're good at, you sort of save what you need to save and don't save what you don't save. But I don't see you, like, desperately doing whatever it takes to have a fuck ton of money.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you're, like, a mess around money or you're poor or something. I'm just saying I look at you and you're not, like, gotta get the house, gotta have the really, really pretty car, gotta be able to go on big vacations. I want to have 50 grand in savings at all times. Like, you're not that guy.
Yeah.
You're doing, like, your artistic fulfillment work because that's what you care about. And you're doing, like, social justice work because that's what you care about. None of it is making you rich. And you're not, like, prioritizing that.
Right.
You're prioritizing, like, pay my bills, have some comfort and ease, and, like, do what I love doing.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
100%.
All right. I have noticed that a lot of people who function that way and aren't going for, like, big numbers had loving parents.
Huh.
And my theory is, I mean, it's not that really psychologically, it's not such a stress. It's kind of obvious, but it's fun to talk about. If you were well-parented, you don't need to go for extremes in any direction. You don't need to be the most famous person, and you don't need to be fucking wealthy, and you don't need to be fucking all the sexy ladies. Because you're not trying to fill some love void with some external thing. Now, you're a human, and you have your things, and we all have our ways that we're trying to fill some something with something. But when I look at that about you, and I can think of a few other people who were relatively well-parented that I know. Now, some of them, let me back up, because some of them who come from wealthy families and were well-parented, those guys soar to the heavens because...
Right.
Because they don't need to make money, but they just do.
Well, also, when you started with money, you will always be able to make more.
True.
If money's in your life, you can usually keep it going.
That's true. Right. You mean because of?
Because just the legacy, family legacy.
Right.
You know,
right.
Family wealth is in the family. So
true.
Unless you do something to screw it up.
You get more of it.
you can build from this. You already have a base that you can fly from.
That's right. That's
right. It's a much higher platform to be soaring, to be jumping off into soaring.
True. And I do notice even people who like could rest on their laurels because there's so much money in the family, like get awesome Wall Street jobs and then make a fuck ton of their own fucking money.
Right.
Because they have self-esteem around money.
Right. Well, but that is also tied into, yeah, they have the self-esteem, so they're comfortable. And then it is also tied into they didn't have to take a job at Trader Joe's, which means they could get the job at Wall Street.
Or of course. Yeah. All of that. I mean, yeah. Privilege is deeply steeped into everything we're talking
but
about.
That's not. But the point we're talking about is more the idea of like, yeah, if you're well-parented, you don't need to grasp at things or climb a ladder. There's no ladder to climb.
You're not desperately trying to get anything because the needs are met internally. So I feel like you can afford internally to take a more balanced approach to life.
Yeah.
Because you're not, what do you think about that?
I agree. But there's another piece of that, at least for me, and I don't know if we can extrapolate this out. With my family, we were always, like where I grew up, I was on the less resourced end of the spectrum of people in my community. Like all my friends and family went on trips and da 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 ba boom and skied and boop 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 boop. And we just didn't.
Okay.
We always had enough. We never had
extra.
Extra. We didn't get awesome toys at Christmas. We got fine. We were like, oh, I got Pong this year. You know, like,
how did that land for you? What was your reaction to that?
I was aware of it always. And I always felt like, oh, everybody else has more. But I also didn't see, they might have sheltered us from it. I didn't see a lot of struggle going on the financial tip either.
Huh.
We always, there's a joke in my family that we're a bunch of spivs. Now, spiv is a term that's a British term that's like people who live perfectly well with no apparent means of support. And it doesn't mean like people who are secretly wealthy. It means people who we just get by. We know how to hang.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, my mom worked that job for a little while and then got a decent, like a teacher's benefit salary that then, you know, 40 years later, oh, there's a chunk of money from her retirement on that.
Yeah.
But it was just for like a couple of years, you know, but it was like,
right.
And then this came in and then that was fine. And like, that's just how I've always operated. Going along with that, it always felt like I was so lucky. Like when I was without any finances, I was, you know, living with my best friend, Jeff, who helped pay rent for me sometimes.
Huh.
That's always been there. I've often had almost nothing and always had plenty.
Oh, God.
And so, like, what is that? Why is that? Am I just in alignment with the universe? Am I just coasting like a lucky-ass, privileged motherfucker? Like, what is the deal?
I'll tell you, I'm
not scrambling for anything. Guess what? I have a house. Why do I have a house? Because I married someone and then someone died. Like,
but that's, okay, can we just real quick? That right there proves the whole thing about what is taught in psychological meets spiritual consciousness-y places about how money works. In other words, what you believe consciously, you know, the idea that like whatever people say, like 90% of your life is being driven by your subconscious. Like there's your conscious mind and then there's your unconscious mind. And your unconscious mind is driving a lot of your decisions. And we think we're in control, but the unconscious is running the fucking show for shiz. So if you're like me and you're doing a ton of work on your unconscious, you can shift the imprinting from childhood. That's the idea anyway with healing and waking up and whatever the fuck else you want to call it, all therapy, all of it, is that what we're doing is changing the brain's neurological response to reality so that you can have more than what you started with or so that you can transcend whatever challenges you started with. In your case, I would argue that it's imprinted in your unconscious mind that there's always enough. There's always enough and there's always plenty and I always feel grateful.
Yeah.
Even when there isn't enough. Or even when there isn't a lot, there's always enough. That is so real for you unconsciously that it gets shown to you.
Yeah.
It gets created externally. That's what you create, as it were.
And I have lived that for 50 friggin' years. Like, I was always aware that we didn't have what other people had, and I was a little resentful of it.
Yeah.
But it didn't, but the underlying conditioning that gave me, and also, let's add to that most of those people were probably drowning in debt. Most of the
people
the other people that I was looking at the other families who are going on vacations and doing all the things.
You think?
I might be projecting, but they were you know, people, how do millionaires, billionaires, maybe not billionaires, but how do millionaires get crushed by financial woes? Because they use their money more than they should.
Right.
Because whatever you have in our society, you then live to and beyond.
Right, right.
Whereas we always lived to.
I see.
And never beyond. And I would predict that those people, my friends growing up down the street, I always felt like they got the best toys and they had really nice cars and...
Or they just had so much that they could buy that stuff and still save. We don't know.
But then, you'd hear like, you know, oh, honey, we can't afford that or whatever. Like arguments in the background or whatever. And you're like, well, why can't you afford it? You afforded this.
Huh. Did your parents ever fight about money?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, see, that's incredible. That's incredible.
They discuss, you know, there would be times they'd be like, oh God, we can't do that. That we don't have that.
Yeah.
Well, what are we going to do?
Right. Huh.
And they may have suffered not being able to give their kids the things that all the other kids were getting.
That suffering never steeped into your reality.
So as a result, I was a little resentful because they were probably like, you don't need that. You don't need that toy. You know, so they're telling me, we're not going to buy you a ColecoVision. That's not something you're going to get. You don't need that. And I was like, but I want it because everybody else has it.
Okay. So then you have the imprinting of I'm always loved. I'm always taken care of. There's always plenty, even when there's not a lot. And
yeah,
I don't always get to have what I want.
Or think I want, let's be honest.
Oh, because it turned out to be things you didn't actually want?
Probably, or didn't need. That's the difference, want and need. Like, of course I wanted a toy.
Yeah, but you didn't need it.
You don't need to buy me a toy gun. I have a stick. Like,
interesting.
Also, my mom would never buy me a toy gun. No way. No toy guns.
Because pacifism.
Oh, yeah. Hated army toys and pretend guns.
All I'm trying to point to here is we're trying to name the Cassidy imprinting. And I think we've named it.
And now we can jump back to the original topic of conversation, which was shit.
Well, no, this is important. I'm glad we're on this because when we look at my imprinting would be something like this. You're not worthy of love unless you're perfect and incredibly successful. So the only way to get love is to be perfect and incredibly successful. Oh, and by the way, you don't even know what love is. There's no such thing as love. So good luck. So then
that's a catch-22.
It's a big catch-22.
The only way to get love, which doesn't exist, is to do these things that are impossible.
Correct.
But if you do these things that are impossible, you can get love, which doesn't exist.
And even if you got it, despite the fact that it doesn't exist, you wouldn't know how to receive it anyway because you've never been imprinted with it. So I was not set up to do very well. And, you know, this is where when people go like money and privilege get you everywhere, I go, kinda, but kinda not. Depends on the context. It really does. And I've worked with a lot of what you might call wealthy, white, privileged people who are privileged in the systemic way that we're like culturally, socially, we are, who are also real fucked up personally.
I can't imagine that. I'm just say names. Allegedly Elon Musk and allegedly Jeff Bezos and allegedly Mark Zuckerberg. I'm just going to go with the three most popular billionaires in our society.
We're well parented.
I don't even know about the parenting, but I can't imagine that they are not
crazy.
Yeah, just mentally completely unsound and emotionally, like if you can continue to get billions and not take half of that and solve world hunger, which, you know, like Elon Musk has been tweeting that lately. He's been saying, hey, show me how to solve world hunger with $10 billion and I'll sell some stock. So someone provides him with a plan and he just tweets that same thing again. It's like that to me, that the fact that he won't unless something, it's like once you get past that first 100 million, none of the rest of it matters at all.
Well, like, that's where when people get cranky about Bill Gates, I go, take 5 minutes and research what he has done with his money.
Yeah, he at least turned around and had a moment of like, okay, now shift.
Yeah, man, in a big way. And if we're going to still be mad at people who started one way and then changed, well, then you've got to be mad at everyone forever.
Right, because everyone needs to change on some level.
We are all growing in real time.
Right.
Sorry, we are.
So I am mad at those three that I just named.
Yeah.
For not changing yet.
Fair enough. And then when they change, I hope you'll be open to, like, forgiving them a little.
Yeah, I will. 100%.
If they changed. We don't know if they're going to change. But see, I love the Gates story because he went like, oh, fuck. All right. You're right. My bad. And then he's like trying to end like dirty water in the whole world and build systems. I mean, the guy's done a lot. I hate to, it's tricky to talk about these people because who knows in 10 years what we learn about what Bill Gates, who was Bill Gates like?
Right.
What sex trade is he running under? I don't know. And I don't think so, but we don't know. I don't fucking know anything about this guy. I just know as much as anybody who reads anything. But at least when people have billions of dollars and they do something philanthropic with it, that's huge.
Yeah.
Right. Don't you think?
I do.
Like, people who are cranky that there are billionaires, I don't agree with that. I don't think there's a problem that there are billionaires. The problem is that what those people do with their billions.
I actually do think there's a problem that there are billionaires because it is an extractive thing. There isn't limitless money. Money does not exist in a vacuum. So if you have, for me, if you can continue to compile more billions.
Yeah.
Then you are extracting, you are literally taking out of the common pool.
Hmm.
Whether you're giving it back a little bit or not, you are extracting from the common pool at a level that is measurable. Like, billionaires are 100% creating this reality in people's life, this shift, the distance between, because money, at least in theory, is a thing that exists on a finite level. They don't just say, oh, more billions exist. No, because it's based on some finite measurement. And so if you are adding more, if during the pandemic you went from having 20 billion to 200 billion, you have actually negatively affected people's lives, because that is 100 billion that is not had by other people that need it.
Oh boy, this is a tough one because I have a different perspective on the money thing in terms of limitless or limited, which is like a spiritual concept, which is a challenging one to present in the context of what you just said.
Right.
So I think I'm going to not try right now, but another time I'd like to get into that. Like, I'd like to talk about, it's kind of like in the moment where you were saying, what was it? What were we talking about that you were like, no, those people are bad. And I was like, okay, we have to talk about the polarity thing. And then later in a text, you were like, I see that I was triggered and I can't even hear about that because I'm so...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But bad is a framework. But I am saying, and in this case, I do think there's a problem with a system in which billionaires exist.
Okay.
That's what I think I'm saying. It means that there is a clog in the cycle. It's like the pathways are clogged because it's being caught in a sieve in one place. So it's not moving.
I hear that. I think what I believe is that there's something like, how do I tell this? I should speak through my own experience. I'll make a statement and then I'll tell a story about my experience with it. I'll do it like this. I have experienced many times that when there's a clog in my system, my personal life system, it can be unclogged miraculously in ways that make no logical sense, no matter how much money there is or isn't in the world around me or not around me. In other words, I can do energetic spiritual consciousness things. I can change my consciousness around money and have more money start coming in without making any external efforts. So for me, I think you can interrupt the cogs that you're referring to. You can function beyond the world of cause and effect. So cause and effect says there's X amount of dollars. We're not just printing money. The billionaires take it, and then there's less over here. From a spiritual perspective, you have to imagine it. Spiritual perspective functions on a different axis. It's a totally different axis where it's saying, if you get vibe in with this axis, you're functioning differently now, and money works differently then. You can literally change the way it's available to you. Now, I understand that when people are in poverty and suffering, they don't have time or energy to deal with a consciousness shift to try to, like, whatever, whatever. But some people do it. Like, it does occur. Like, some people who kind of get on board with this idea and then mess around with it find out at all levels of financial strati, oh, you can, like, what's that story? What's that Will Smith movie? The guy who comes from nothing.
Right. The something happiness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. Now, that guy showed up and kicked ass. Like, he didn't just sit around and change his consciousness. He showed up and kicked ass. And I believe you have to do both. But I have seen it happen too many times that it is, in fact, true that you can alter how much money is available to you through, I'll just say, for lack of a better way to say it, energy work or consciousness shifting. Because when you're imprinting, you know how we've been talking about this imprinting? You have a Cassidy imprint and I have a Katie imprint. When your imprinting is altered by let's say, divine light or just changing, however you do it, right? More becomes available to you. You do have access to more. It's all about what you believe is possible. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have to do stuff and poor people can just like shift their consciousness and money just shows up in their door. No, you have to create vehicles through which the money can arrive,
right?
Like I have to have a business where people pay me to do this and do that. But when you create the vehicle, you want to think of like, all right, let's say my healing sessions are one arm of the vehicle. And let's say that that arm is like a tunnel. Let's just call it metaphorically a tunnel from which there's clients over here at one end of the tunnel, and then there's the tunnel, and then there's me. The amount of clients that can send cash through that tunnel, I'm telling you from my personal experience, changes depending on my state of being and my state of mind all the time. So I'm not sure I can get on board with the idea that when you take money over here, you're draining this pool over here. I wonder what would happen if people at the pool that are suffering had some more consciousness tools, which of course I've had time to have because I'm privileged and all that is true. It doesn't change that. I wonder what would happen. Like, I wonder if we approached all of this from the realm of unity, like we all get to have what we need. Let's do some energy work and pull in the resources we need and create the vehicles through which we can pull them in. Like if we had structures set up that taught people these things, and I understand it's much more complicated than just take a course and learn consciousness stuff and then da da da, because the system has to be changed in order for people to build the vehicles I'm talking about. That is true. But do you see what I'm saying at all?
I 100% see what you're saying. And I think that I don't think it's actually different than necessarily than what I'm saying, because you're still describing a thing in which something is coming to you. And that is that you're actually describing a thing that exists that is measurable. These clients pay you money,
right?
And more money comes to you when your cable is more open or your tunnel is more open. But if someone, but those clients need to still release their money to come to you.
So
for me, someone who is, and it is still a measurable finite resource. So my problem is not with the people's ability to receive. My problem is that there are literally people who are holding it, the amount that is available to be moving through those tunnels out.
But is it?
But also I think that this is also based on my conditioning.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a world.
Right.
In which I would have $1 billion and I would not have fixed Flint's water system immediately.
Right.
Because it would mean nothing to me. It would be.
Right.
A.
Easy.
It would be the hole in my pocket.
Yeah.
Would fix Flint's water system.
Yeah.
And then someone would say, actually, you could fix world hunger with a tenth of what you have. And I wouldn't just go, you want to run that organization? Here's the money. I don't want to do the work. I want someone else to do the work, but here's the money. Like, why you wouldn't release those plugs in your sink every day? Because I don't need to have extra.
Right.
So I don't need, because of my conditioning, I don't need to build up I don't need my sink to be overflowing.
Sure.
And so I can't imagine a world in which you would, like, so that's where I say, like, I am in judgment of those guys not letting more of it go.
I understand that. But I'm talking about kind of a separate thing. I'm talking about, I actually am not sure I agree that there is a finite pool and some people are keeping it so that we can't have access to it.
No, that is literally what money is. It is a finite pool. That is like the numbers in your bank account.
Yeah.
That is finite. That is not a spiritual concept.
I disagree. And I'm definitely
the concept of your getting your needs met, that's a spiritual concept. But literally the numbers in your bank account.
No, I disagree. That's what I'm trying to say. I have a totally different experience of that. But see,
that's not an experience question. That is literally just math. That's a fact.
No, see, this is where I'm going to stop.
If I have 10 pieces of gold in my hand,
I'm going to stop because we're not going to. This is what I was saying a minute ago when I said we're not going to do this now because you're going to get so heated that you're not going to hear me.
I don't think I'm heated.
Well, I don't think you can hear me, though. It's too crazy, right? It's too crazy. Not because there's a problem with you, but just because we're so different on this.
There literally is 10 pieces of gold. 10 pieces of gold.
Go ahead.
I can't spiritually now have 12 pieces of gold.
But here's how you can. You can. You can. Not okay. You're going to think it's... I'm not saying 10 can be 12. I'm saying energetically, if you do different things with your consciousness, it can go from being 10 to 20 very fast in a way that makes no logical sense. So it makes no logical sense. Someone who... It shouldn't be able to pour into my world because the billionaires have it. The big bad billionaires have all the money.
Right.
So I can't have it down here. I can't because Katie, math, because reality. And I'm saying actually the way it works is you can change how much you can receive no matter what the billionaires are doing or not doing forever. No matter what they're doing or not doing, I can change what I receive through doing energy work around my consciousness around money. And it'll...
Right.
There will be more.
Where are you receiving it from? Where is it coming from?
Wherever. It's coming from people.
Who is writing you a check.
Sure.
That is their money that has now left them and come to you.
Except they can receive infinitely too.
Right. From someone else. That's what I'm
saying.
But
what is your point about that?
It is a cycle. It is
a
constant cycle.
But that doesn't change. That's true. But I'm saying you can hack the cycle so that you can actually pull from a bigger resource that logically is impossible. There can't be more money, Katie, than there is. Except that I live the miracle of that every day.
I agree with you on the spiritual level, and my only resistance to that is I actually don't believe that you are not getting something from somewhere else that exists.
No, but I'm not saying I'm not getting it from somewhere that exists. Of course I'm getting it from somewhere that exists. I'm not fighting that idea. I'm saying to you that it doesn't. Okay,
separate from, I think we are actually discussing, I agree 100% with what you're saying on the level of there is movement and you can increase that movement through your consciousness, 100%. Okay. And there are those who are literally holding some of that energy back from the common movement system.
I just think you can function beyond that. I think they...
Oh, I can individually, 100%.
So...
I'm just mad that people won't fix Flint's water system. That is really what it comes down to.
Okay, that's a different thing, though, than what we're talking about.
That's all I've been talking about.
Well, then you don't have to be mad that they're holding it with regard to people being poor.
Except that they're holding something back that people need and could. And it is less in the system because they have extracted it.
I think I disagree with that piece, but I do agree with... billionaires should fix Flint's water system today. And
right.
I do agree with billionaires could easily put cash in the hands of people who need it.
Yeah.
And they should.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But I don't agree with the tiny part about they've pulled it out and therefore it's not available to the rest. I don't think that's true energetically. It's just not been my experience.
Right. It's not true energetically. It is true fiscally.
But they're not separate.
It is true mathematically.
But math and physics and energy are not separate. It's all one thing.
And also the economy is completely made up anyway, so it's kind of...
Exactly.
It's kind of a moot point.
It's all one thing.
Yeah.
So my point is I'll say this a different way. Yes, billionaires should do different things with their money than they do, and we get to be frustrated that they don't.
Right.
But that I think if I were to take someone who doesn't have money and needs it and work with them for, I don't know, 3 or 6 months and teach them about the spiritual practices they could do that would literally change the money that comes into their life, it wouldn't be relevant whatever this billionaire is doing over here. Doesn't matter because they can get as much as they need from the universe. Not from the pipeline of actual dollars, from the universe, because that's how it works. It does work that way. It works beyond cause and effect, simple, rational. This is it is trans rational. It's past that. I get that that's not satisfying.
Yeah.
Because it to the rational mind, it's like, no, but rationally, da da da.
Right.
And I'm saying, cool, I'm speaking a different language than rational. I'm on a different matrix. I'm over, you're on the X and I'm on the Y axis,
right.
And we're talking about different things. But so I disagree that they when they pull their money over here, this guy can't have it. I don't think that's true. Because if I trained them, they could have it.
Right.
And I'm not saying, like, look at me being great. I'm saying anybody who knows these tools, who trains these folks, anybody could do it. So I don't think billionaires always allocate their money well.
Right.
And they should, if they have a bunch of it, why not help with the fucking all the things?
Yeah. Or just the simple fact of their own business that made them the billions. Like, and that's, yeah. So my reaction is in how can you possibly extract money? And this is me acknowledging that I'm moving into a totally different realm.
Okay.
My reaction has to be with, is more the closed system of people's own finances. Like, if you run a business, pay people $20,000 a year to bust their asses and break their spines in your loading your...
Oh, I see. In your business.
In your business that you then continue to take more billions out of.
Right.
And then say, well, this is what we can afford to do. It's how we keep our business going.
Uh-huh.
But you have more billions now, and they still have the same barely enough and are suffering. So
right.
That's good. How is that?
It's not.
That's literally, like, they're the one. That's the lie. The lie is in, I can keep extracting because that's how the business works. I'm like, no, you can't actually.
I see.
But they do. And so spiritually, in a sense, they're also doing much more damage, I think, too, because they're closing that. They're closing.
Well, they're not contributing.
They put a one-way valve in their tunnel.
They're not contributing. That's right. They're not giving back.
Right.
Which is an interesting thing.
Because you're passing this shit through you constantly.
Sure. Yep.
Even when you're getting more money.
Oh, yeah.
You are passing that shit right through. It is.
Yeah, that's
it is
true.
Not. It does. I mean, and that's why I'm talking about, like, this massive dragon on a pile of gold. It's hoarding as opposed to
being safe
or comfortable.
Give and take. Yeah, 100%.
The dragon doesn't need the gold. He's sitting on it because somehow that's the most comfortable bed he can sleep on.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, if billionaires, it's almost like if they were to improve the quality and the financial realities of their workers, right? The people in their own company, like make everybody live well. And then after that, use whatever extra billions they're sitting on in their cave to solve world problems. Would we still be, I know my answer, but would you still be mad at them for having billions left over?
I think I'd be less mad if they had, you know, if you somehow amassed $200 billion, which you shouldn't have, but then you went and I'm going to be honest, you need to get rid of, if you have $200 billion, you need to get rid of $199 billion. I need you to only have $1 billion left because guess what you need? $50 million. That's what you actually need.
Right.
And if you've ever looked at the, like, ratio numbers, they're like, imagine a dollar is a day, okay? And a person who has $50 million, they earned that. It would take, you know, X amount of time to earn $50 million would take you, let's say it took you a year.
Okay.
The difference between $50 million and even $1 billion is like 2,000 years.
Okay.
It's some insanely different level of, like,
okay,
of ballooning that I can't, that's where I can't even fathom why you wouldn't give work. Just bleed out $190 billion and have $10 billion left over. $10 billion. That's it. That's fine. You know what? Have $10 billion. Billion. Billion.
No, I get it.
So you're right. And I also totally want to acknowledge that my heart rate is up and you're absolutely right. And I was triggered, but I'm actually glad we keep talking about it because I do think that
I actually really am too.
I am talking about human behavior and how they interact with other, like, humans that they are responsible for, in a sense.
Well, I also hear you talking about, like, care.
Yeah.
You're like, could these people please care a little? Could they care about the people they're dealing with?
And that's why I can't imagine.
Well, of course not. I just don't think that not being able to imagine what billionaires do, it changes spiritual truths about how money flows. They're two different...
Money flows. I agree with you on the flows.
Yeah. I'm clearly not going to sell you on this concept, but I'm just saying, like, it's it's so true for me that like,
right.
I just can't, you, I think you can't sell me on your thing fully and I can't sell you on my thing. And that's okay.
Right.
And I do think we did a good job because I, your points are so important for us all to be talking about. Like, and I think mine are too. I think we need to teach people how they can function beyond cause and effect. I only can have this because you have that. I have to teach more people that so that people can feel empowered with their money.
Mm.
And we need to understand that like billionaire culturally, like billionaires need to fucking contribute because they can and we need help.
Right.
Like they can. What
Pay
else
your
are
taxes.
They?
It's that easy. It's pretty
it's
easy.
Just sitting there. It's just sitting there. Fucking use it for. Yeah, I think both things are true.
Release that made up number. Yeah. And here I am arguing that it's a finite resource, which it still in my mind mathematically is, and it's also completely made up and arbitrarily valued, and people are buying digital pictures for billions of dollars and then selling them for trillions. Like, what?
Isn't that interesting?
Doesn't yeah. make any sense. Or cryptocurrency, it just shows how transparently arbitrary it all is.
Yeah, and because of, to me, like, I see all that stuff happening and I go, yeah, see, none of this is, it's not finite. It's just energy. It's just people right. deciding stuff
I
and believing in things. So we can...
Yeah, and it does have to do with what we've agreed to value a digit as, a terabyte as, a
totally
piece of data as.
Beyond that, like, I have students who all say, like, and we can wrap up here, I know, but I talk about this all the time in healing class. Like, when I need to make more money, sometimes what I do is, like, put out a discount, make an offer, put a new class together, tell people about it. Other times what I do is just open the Akashic Records and ask for more money. And both things work.
Yeah.
And so, that's my life experience.
Oh, I have no idea how I've gotten this far in life. I've absolutely.
Because of your imprinting.
And when money comes in, where did that come from? I 100% acknowledge the absolute ineffable quality of financial flow and how I have been blessed.
You have imprinting that says I get to be blessed. Yeah. That's your imprinting. I have to change my imprinting every day through spiritual practice because I have terrible imprinting. So I have to do it. So because I have to do it, I end up getting like, well, fuck, I'll ask for more. I'm in here anyway, changing my shit. Let's go ahead and have a lot.
I occasionally ask for more.
Because I got nothing to
yeah.
fall back on. Like I got no like, it'll be comfy when I talk to my mom about my feelings. Nope, I better have more
right.
money.
It's true.
So I can buy a comfortable bed. Because nobody's holding me at night.
So you have to get a giant pillow with Nicolas Cage's face on it.
Oh.
Do you want a Nicolas Cage pillow?
I have a small dog. She's kind of, I mean, we literally spoon at night. You know what I'm really happy about? I'm leaving this conversation. I feel very calm.
Me too.
I'm not triggered. I'm very happy.
I love you too. I also think we ended up having an interesting conversation. Sometimes I think about in saying goodbye, I do think about, how are we going to describe this episode? Like in the notes. And that's like, I'm like, oh yeah, good. We're fine. We have plenty to.
With words
about, they talked about a bunch of shit, parenting and money.
Well, but hold on. It's a spiritual podcast. Okay. Comedy, spiritual podcast. And I talked a lot about the consciousness aspect of money. Money is a spiritual flow thing. And it's a thing I teach all the time. And we should talk about it again because I could teach more about how people can change their consciousness around money and
yeah.
have more of it and not deplete other people at the same
yes.
time because both things can happen simultaneously. And that is a spiritual concept. You happen to be on this podcast and holding a very linear, duality-based, this reality point of view about money. But I'm holding a transcendent, unity-based, spiritual point of view about money, and we're discussing that. So I think we're having a spiritual conversation about money.
There it is.
And that's what we do. We have spiritual conversations about things. So it's right on point.
Yeah.
I also have a real ability I realized the other day. I can make anything. I can make really good arguments about a lot of shit. Like, I could justify most anything. We could talk about Cheetos for 2 hours, and I'd be like, but see, Cheetos at their essence
is something we are feeding ourselves as empty calories, and we understand that...
Well, Cheetos are oneness, and God is light.
Because God is everything, and oneness is everything, and so...
And Cheetos are oneness.
That fart you just let rip, that was oneness.
Do your
work. I love you to pieces. Bye. Asking for all of the answers. Say what? All of the answers?
Yeah, all the answers. Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod, @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Do you want to cut this out? We can.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.